Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
It's 8 o'clock. This is LA Talk Radio, and you're listening to The Writer's Block. My name is Jim Christina, and I'm here in the studio with the charming and wonderful Bobby Jean Bell, her husband Jim, holding up the wall. And I have to tell you, tonight before I left, my wife was opening up all the emails because she's doing our booking now, and she had like a ton of them, and she just went, oh, I need a raise. So what, I'm not even paying you. And she, I need a raise. And she elevated herself now to booking manager, and I have to pay her $20 a week. So.
Oh, but she's doing such a great job.
She's really taken a load off of everything.
Jerry,
and
I
know you're listening,
you.
So thank you so much. Last week, Russ asked me a question, and I, for some reason, I didn't get around to answering it. So I'm going to answer it tonight before we get started. He asked me where my characters came from. And I think I skirted all around the question, never really answered it, alluded to a lot of things, but never really came down to it. So I'm going to say tonight, my characters come from the desire to beat the character from the last book, the bad guys. I love the bad guys. So they're all worse than the one preceding them. But they come from the storyline. That's where they come from. They have to be germane to the story.
Well, we look forward to having you be our main guest next week.
Just next week.
When we're really going to learn more about Jim Christina, the writer.
And it's more than you'll ever want to know.
And songwriter.
And songwriter. Yeah. And I'm a music writer and a lyric writer and a book writer and a play writer and a poem writer. And holy crap, I'm a busy guy. Bobby, who's on tonight?
We have in the studio author Janet Squires.
Woo!
And she's been part of the Out West Rendezvous with a Writer series since way back when we didn't even have a storefront yet. She was hanging out with us at festivals, and we're just excited to have her with us tonight.
Good, good. So what's her credentials? I know she's got some, and I know you have them.
Oh, do you want them now?
Well, surely.
Okay. Janet, are you ready? We're getting going here.
Ready when you are.
Okay. Well, I am so thrilled to introduce our guest today, Janet Squires, who began her career writing short stories and nonfiction articles, and she's won awards for both fiction and nonfiction. She's a library media specialist and provides presentations on writing, and she teaches workshops in schools, libraries, and private venues. So she's available for you, and you can contact us on that. Her interest in the historic West stems from the stories she heard growing up. Her family pioneered their way through Texas, New Mexico, and Arizona as ranchers, miners, and lawmen. And her favorite activity is anyone that involves horses or dogs. There isn't a time in her life when she didn't share her life with at least one. And her interest in animal rescue and welfare issues made writing one of her books, Monty, The Courageous Survival of a Rescue Dog, which we'll be talking about shortly, an opportunity she couldn't resist. Author of the award-winning children's book, The Gingerbread Cowboy, she has recently released her first historical fiction novel set in the West, Desperate Straits. Please welcome Janet Squires to The Writer's Block. Howdy, Janet.
Howdy.
Hi, Janet.
It's so nice to be here with both of you.
Well, nice to have you here. Library lady.
Oh, yep. Among other things.
We had mentioned on several times that Bobby and I had talked about it, that we really wanted the writer to read something from their book. And Bobby brought it up, and we'd really like you to read a passage from possibly your newest book.
Okay, I would be happy to. I'm going to just start with the very first scene in Desperate Straits. Might as well start at the beginning. This scene is set in Ireland. Be brave. Sarah nodded. Her throat ached too much for words, and she couldn't let herself cry. He couldn't bear to see her tears. Instead, she reached for her father's hand. His cold fingers no longer trembled. His body had not even that much strength. His nails were blue, the veined skin waxy and pallid. Sarah. His voice was stubborn, taut with effort. Dread filled Sarah's heart, but she lifted her gaze. He smiled, his dark eyes still warm in an ashen face. Please, Papa. You'll sell the colt to Lord Gregory. He's always fancied him, and Kip won't end up a cavalry mount ridden to death in some war. There's still time. No. Sarah wanted to beg, hated herself for that weakness, knew he was right, all in the same agonized moment. Give me your promise, child, he rasped. His eyes held her, commanding one last act of loving obedience. You have it. She didn't recognize the voice that passed her lips, but he hadn't noticed. Her words released him. Sarah rested her cheek on his silent chest, and the tears, so long unshed, came at last.
Wow.
Well, I tell you, I read this book, and she got me at that first line, be brave. And I was with her every turn in every page as fast as I could. And sorry when it ended. You're a wonderful writer. The words just flow. There's poetry in the way that you put your words together, Janet. It's just, it's a really wonderful book.
Well, it's great to hear you say that.
Well, I think a sign of a good story is that once you read that first line, that first paragraph, if it's got you, it's got you. You're never going to be able to stop reading it because from that point, it just gets better.
Absolutely. How difficult is it to come up with a first line? Is that where you start or do you start someplace else, you know, midway through and then you go back to the beginning?
Well, you know, it depends a lot on the story. I don't have a formula that I work from where I, you know, approach writing a book exactly the same way every time. A lot of it comes out of the inspiration for the story, and that may determine where I get started. But in this case, I was pulling from something that that was just so powerful for me that, you know, that's where I ended up, you know, that's where I ended up starting the book, was with those lines.
Hmm.
Do you, should we go back in Janet's background a little bit and just kind of tell us a little bit about yourself and kind of your, you know, your personal history?
Yeah, what can you tell us that's not in your bio?
That's not in my bio. Oh, my gosh.
Remember, this is internet radio, so you can say anything you want.
And we only have an hour, so let's see. Well, you know, the thing is, my background is Irish mostly and Cherokee, and those are two cultures that are great storytellers. And I grew up with that storytelling culture, with that heritage. And, you know, from the time I was a little girl, I was hearing stories from my dad, from my uncles, you know, and anytime I would be around them, there would be, there was this time. And then, you know, there was a time that this happened, and there was the time that that happened. And, you know, your uncle, you know, he was part of the Lincoln County Wars. And, you know, every time a stranger would come to town, he'd disappear into the hills, and we never knew exactly why. But, you know, we all, you know, had our ideas about why these different things happened. So I grew up with this, you know, really strong storytelling heritage. And, you know, that's a lot of where my storytelling comes from, is those old stories and, you know, that personal history that I've got. I remember one of my fondest memories was waking up in Arizona at my grandparents' house, and the first thing I would hear in the morning when I would wake up in this creaking old brass bed was the sound of my dad in the woodshed chopping wood so that my grandmother could cook breakfast on a wood-burning stove. She used a wood-burning stove till the day she died. She'd grown up using that on the ranch. It's what she knew, you know, how to do. It's what she had. And I think I was probably a teenager or almost a teenager by the time my uncles finally convinced her to get a refrigerator. Up until then, my Uncle Bill would show up every morning with a block of ice for the ice box.
Oh, gosh.
And so I grew up, you know, with that sort of background. And so it's very real for me. And then, you know, I was a history major in college. So history is something that fascinates me. So you put those two things together, and what I didn't actually live or hear about from my family, I could research. But I always had a personal buy-in for it. You know, it clicked with something, you know, that was fundamental for me. So
now, you had a history of your family had a history of ranching and
lawmen. Lawmen, yeah. One of my uncles was a Texas Ranger, fought in the Comanche Wars, and you know, they my grandmother came to Arizona by stage by covered wagon. And her youngest brother actually died on the way and was buried along the trail. I mean, it's those kinds of, you know, that's the sort of personal history I come from. So it does inform my writing. Makes it very personal for me.
What inspired you to write Desperate Straits?
Some of those stories, actually.
Really?
Nothing's autobiographical
in
the book. But, you know, again, it's, you know, this story, this character, this incident. And I pull from all of that in the book. The book is clearly, you know, it's fiction, but, you know, I'm still pulling on that familiar frontier background that I've got.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And Desperate Straits refers to a place.
It does.
Okay. And can it kind of fill us in what that place is without giving the story away?
Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Well, Desperate Straits itself is a chasm. Cut by a waterfall, high up in the mountains, and it's a one-way trip. You get to the top, and there's really no safe way across. But you know, it's a very dangerous place. And in the story, the chasm got its name because there's a legend that a prospector who was being chased by Indians jumped his horse across the chasm to escape. And, you know, nobody really knows if that's true or not, but that's the story of how it got its name.
And other people, having tried it, of course, didn't quite make it.
No. Yeah, most people look at it and go,
it's a real place.
It's a fictional place.
It's a fictional place, okay.
But
it's a fictional place.
Fictional place inspired by places I have been.
Right, okay. Well, and it's such a great title because it refers to, you know, has many layers. To a place that takes a very significance in the book, but also Desperate Straits, you know.
Well, it makes for a great title to a book.
It does, yeah.
Many of us live that way every day.
Right. I'm so glad you brought that up. And with that, I think we're going to take a little tiny break, and we'll be back in a few. Back. You're listening to LA Talk Radio. This is the Writer's Block, and if you haven't been listening up to now, why not? We're here in the studio with Janet Squires, and we're talking about her book, her new book called Desperate Straits. And Bobby has read it, and what did you get out of it?
Oh, I just I want to be Sarah Ryan, the main character. I really want to be Sarah Ryan as pictured on the cover of the book also.
Oh, yeah, you know? With your shotgun.
Yeah, with my shotgun and just that gorgeous long red hair. And, you know, we all want to be Sarah Ryan, I think. Her characters are all just so well developed. Tell us a little bit about LT.
LT. Well, he's a complex man. And he has his own issues that he has to deal with. He has, he thinks he has a very clear understanding of who he is and what he wants and how things ought to be. And when he finds himself in this situation with a suddenly orphaned nephew and this unexpected woman in his life, he starts having to rethink, you know, who he is and what his goals are. And really has to start questioning a lot of his ideas that he's you know, been really comfortable with.
Yeah.
So she makes his life pretty uncomfortable for quite a while.
Well, they are. They're remarkable characters. They develop through the book, I find. And that's something I like about good writing, mm-hmm. is we go on the journey with the characters as they're embracing the life that they're moving through, and we see how they grow or not grow, you
right.
know. Now, we just talked about Desperate Straits a minute ago, and that it's a fictional location, but there's a couple other locations that really are almost like characters in the book, and Hermit's Rest is one of them, and then the Lost Adam's Diggings is another one. Tell us a little bit about those two spots.
Well, Hermit's Rest is the name of the ranch, and there is actually a Hermit's Rest in Arizona, but the ranch doesn't exist there. And then the Lost Adam Diggings is actually a real thing. Arizona is famous for all its lost mines, and the Lost Adam Diggings is one of those stories of gold found and then lost and never found again. And it's a central theme in the book, you know, the obsession with that gold and trying to find it. And it's one of the big motivations for our villain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no spoiler alert here. You got to read the book to find out what happens to
gold. And of course, the good guy being the strong, silent type.
Oh, we all want an LT in our life, too.
Yeah.
Of course, I have one.
I don't.
Yeah. You know, he just makes your heart, like, you know, pound a little faster when LT arrives on the page. It's like, oh, LT's back. tell us a little bit, since we're talking about characters, what types of characters do you like to write about?
Strong women. I can give you that one right out of the gate. I have a friend that we both write, and we both come from a place where we say no weak women. You know, we have no tolerance for them. So my women are always strong. They're not flawless. Mm-hmm. And they all have their weak moments, but they are basically strong women, and you know, that's for me one of the big deals. And then everybody else has to keep up with them.
Yes,
everybody else in the book has to deal with them one way or the other.
I'm going to take a little break here. I'm not going to turn on the music, but I am going to say that the Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing and Out West Boutique and Cultural Center in Newhall. And the number here to call if you want to talk to Janet, you want to talk to Bobby, me, or Jim, or anybody sitting in the studio, is 818-602-4929. That number again is 818-602-4929. And a question for you, Janet, is where do your characters come from?
Well, they come from a combination of those great stories that I heard growing up. And, you know, I may take some aspect of a character and become intrigued by that, and then ask myself, okay, what kind of a person would have that, you know, would do that kind of behavior, or would, you know, take that kind of a risk?
Mm-hmm.
And then I have to start answering all those questions. You know, what if they did this? Why would they do that? And I better be able to answer every single one of them.
Ah, good answer.
For Desperate Straits, did you have a sense of all of the characters, like the cast of characters, as you began to write? Or, you know, did the sheriff, you know, did he come into the story later, or did you already know, I'm going to have this cast?
This bad guy.
Yeah.
I
a bad guy.
Started out with the central characters. They were very clear in my mind. LT and Sarah and Will and Jeremy and Simpson were all clear. And then, you know, they developed as I wrote. You know, if I'm doing it right, my characters start to speak to me. And along the way, you know, they'll do something or they'll say something, and I'll go, oh, I didn't realize that about that character. But yes, of course, that would be true. And so then they begin to grow and become multi-layered and, you know, a lot more interesting.
We find a lot, and I find this when I'm writing a character too, is that as they grow and as they progress through the story, you find that one of the layers that, in most characters, not all, one of the layers that seems to pop up at least in my characters, are this underlying anger. They've got this anger that's kind of at the bottom of what they're doing, and it just always seems to kind of like rise to the surface and then get pushed back down, at least in my main character, the hunter. That's a lot of what happens with him. But then a lot of my other characters have the same anger, and maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm just an angry guy.
Yeah, I was going to really say,
it's that sublimated fury that
right.
lurks.
But yes, the story itself dictates the characters, and I totally get that.
Right.
And let's break away from Desperate Straits for a minute, and let's talk about The Gingerbread Cowboy.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's one of your more popular little books.
It is. That was actually my first children's picture book, and that book came out in 2006, and it was named the 2007 Arizona Governor's First Grade Book. And what that means is that a committee of librarians in Arizona at that time looked at suggested literature. They had stacks and stacks and stacks and stacks of books, and whittled it down to about two or three choices, which they then gave the governor, and then the governor chose from those selections the one that they most wanted to provide to the students. And this was a program that was run for a number of years in Arizona under the governor at that time, and it was not taxpayer funded. It was all funded privately.
Mm-hmm.
And an Arizona Governor's First Grade Book went to every first grade student in the state of Arizona. So there was a special printing, special edition of The Gingerbread Cowboy, because it came out originally in hardcover. There was a special paperback edition printed. And like I say, a copy went to every first grade student in the state. And the governor and I toured Arizona. She read my book, which was exciting to see the governor reading, you know, the book, and it did a very credible job. As you know, you get a little nervous when someone else is reading your book. You're hoping it's going to go well, and it was a great deal of fun. We traveled to a lot of schools in Arizona, signed books for them, and it was a great experience.
So I have to ask: did the governor have a hardback copy or a soft copy?
Well, yeah, the governor did get. Did get a hardcover copy, I saw to that.
Being a smart aleck is part of my...
Yeah, but the special edition did come out in paperback, so...
It's a wonderful story. It's a wonderful story. Can you tell us a little bit just about what happens? What's the story of the Gingerbread Cowboy?
Well, I wrote it... I was working as a library media specialist at the time and reading to kindergarten classes every year, and every year we do a big gingerbread unit, and I read The Gingerbread Man. And I had read the story so many times that I actually had it memorized. And at that time, I was writing for adults. And at some point, it came to my awareness that I'm writing for adults, but I'm reading to children. What's wrong with this picture? And The Gingerbread Man being a story I was really familiar with, I thought, well, why not do that? And I've got this Western cowboy heritage. What happens if I put the two together, and the book was the result. So it's really a Wild West Gingerbread Man story set in the Southwest.
And you need to have Janet come to your organization and read it aloud.
I don't think my employees would appreciate
well,
it.
Well, I'm looking at you, but I'm speaking to our listeners.
Although some of them are childish.
Because her reading of The Gingerbread Cowboy is really fun. And she has activities and things that go along with it.
There's a lot of activities. You know, like if I visit a school, I'll bring activities that the teachers can do as follow-up with the kids. There's drawing activities and writing activities and, you know, all kinds of fun stuff for the kids to do. And you know, I do a whole presentation about how the book got written and how it got illustrated and, you know, how we went from just having an idea to having a finished book in our hand. And it's a lot of fun, and I really enjoy, you know.
Well, it's quite an accomplishment, especially when it's your first book.
Yes.
And thousands of copies,
yeah.
Many languages now.
Yes, yes. The book's been picked up by a number of educational publishers. So there are Spanish versions, there are audio versions, not for the general public, but available, you know, from these educational
through the school
publishers and
gotcha.
You know, for school districts, Scholastic is one of them. Pearson Education, which is the biggest publisher of educational material in the country, They have sub-rights for it. Scholastic has sub-rights for it. And the book's out there doing its, amazing little thing with, loving to read with kids.
Well, we're going to take another short little break, and we'll be back with Janet Squires here in just a few minutes here at LA Talk Radio, The Writer's Block. Back. This is LA Talk Radio and the Writer's Block. I'm Jim Christina here with Bobby Bell and Janet Squires in studio. If you want to call and talk to Janet, Bobby, me, Janet's daughter, Jim over there holding up the wall, whoever, 818-602-4929. That number is 818-602-4929. And the Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing and Out West Boutique and Cultural Center. Janet, this is a question.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. This show is called The Writer's Block. Have you ever had one?
No.
Liar, liar, pants on fire.
So the question usually is in two parts. Have you had one? And we know you have. So how do you work your way through a writer's block?
Usually the best thing for me is to write something else for a while. I usually have more than one project going on. Right now I'm working on two different projects primarily, and then I have three or four other little side projects that are waiting for my attention. And so if I get really stuck on something, I'll just work on something else for a while. And that usually, gets me going again.
Because we have heard everything from backing up a chapter to
Rename
a character to writing something else.
It's really fun.
Everybody's got a different way they handle it, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. Now, how do you do your research for your books?
Well, I have a huge library, and I have lots of post-it notes, and I was a history major in college, so research is second nature for me, and it's really nice now because we've got the internet. I mean, I started doing research when it was going to the library and carting home 20 books, and then it's like, okay, I need these three pages out of this book and that chapter of that book, and oh wait a minute, where's that, those notes in the appendix of book number 47. And so now it's it's a lot easier to be organized with the internet. You can access a lot more resources than I could when I first started.
Well, you can get to the other volumes for the appendix a whole lot faster. Yeah. That's for sure. I'm a history major too, so I know exactly where you're coming from. But okay, another technical question. I didn't know you set time aside today to read or to write. How much time and how do you regulate your writing into your daily stuff?
That's a tricky question. It's not something real formal with me. I like to write in the morning when I'm fresh. But if I sit down and I hook into something, I can be there for hours. And, or if I start at night, maybe 11 or 12 o'clock at night, and I'm thinking I'm really going to be tired tomorrow, but wait, I've just got, I've got three more pages, and then I get to the end of those three pages, like, oh no, wait, I've still got three more pages. So, it just, if it gets a hold of you, you have to keep going until, you feel like it's safe to, turn away from it, because what if I don't keep track of something? So I usually write till I'm kind of written out, and sometimes it's hard. I mean, sometimes it's just putting yourself in the chair and just having to do the work because you're not feeling inspired and nothing's going all that well, but you just keep putting words on the page and hoping that at some point one of those words goes, that's the word you were looking for, or that's that was the idea, you finally nailed it. you know, 47 pages later or something, but you know, you finally got there. So,
and are you typing or are you handwriting or what's
I can write both ways. You know, I can compose at my computer, and but I always do at least one edit longhand. I can edit on the computer too, but I find that I will discover things that need to be fixed when I'm looking at that long, you know, the print page, and I'm making corrections longhand. So
interesting.
I have to do both.
Yeah, you
need
have to
be
do
really
both.
Thorough.
Right. Because I find myself when I'm really tired and I'm trying to finish up a chapter or a segment, and I get up the next morning and I look at it and I go, what the hell is all this? I have no clue what I just wrote.
Oh, you know, sometimes I'm working on our website really, really late at night. And when I look at the next day what I put up, I realize I forgot to offer size or color options. Or I must have fallen asleep and hit like the X key. Because like in the center of the description of the item, there'll be...
how did that word get in there and what does it mean?
Like, what was that? What was I doing? Now, you also have a blog that you maintain.
I do. The blog is primarily for reviewing books. I review nonfiction on Mondays. I do poetry on Fridays. Again, you know, this is kind of my educational background. These are books that I think are going to be great for Common Core and, you know, usable in an educational setting. And then Wednesday is what I call Writer's Wednesday. And so I may review an adult book. I may have an interview with an author. I may have some writing tips, you know, or some article that I ran across that I think other writers might find valuable. So I, you know, it's sort of a free-for-all on Wednesdays. Depends on what's inspiring me at the moment.
What's the address for the blog? Where can people get that?
It's called All About the Books with Janet Squires, and you can just Google it. It comes right up.
If you Google Janet Squires, it comes right up.
Yes, it does. I'm all over the place.
Yeah, actually, you are, which is not a bad thing.
No. Yeah, there's about a full page of Google, and then there's a couple of surgeons at the bottom that also happen to have my name. But,
yeah. Well, we don't care
about
that.
That's not them. So
who are your favorite authors to read? Who do you enjoy reading?
Oh boy, I read a lot of different kinds of things. I particularly like reading nonfiction. I like reading history. I like science. Fiction writers, gosh, it varies with me. I was a big Louis L'Amour fan. I like Anne Lamott. I like Sherlock Holmes. Let's see. I mean, off the top of my head, I could probably come up with a list of 100. You know, but short term, there's three right off the top of my head.
Well, and you belong to a couple of different writing groups. It was sort of fun to see the groups that you belong to. Two of them actually have conferences coming up. You belong to Women Writing the West.
Yes.
And
Western Writers of America.
Western Writers was last weekend,
right.
Though, wasn't it?
That's right. Yeah, in Lubbock.
Yeah,
in Lubbock. And the Society of Children's
Book Writers and Illustrators.
And their conference is coming up in L.A.?
In August, yes.
Yeah.
Their August conference is always in L.A. in February in New York.
Oh.
I don't know why I would want to be in New York in February.
Oh, me either.
So I've never made that one. It's like, I don't think so.
What would you say to inspiring writers about the benefits of belonging to a writer's group?
Support. Writing is a very insulating activity. You know, you do it by yourself. It's just you and your computer, and that's a good thing when if everything's going well. But at some point, you have to acknowledge the fact that you're not writing just for yourself. Usually, you're writing for a wider audience, and so at some point, you need to get out there with that audience. For a number of years, I did an event called the Critiquenik that the SCBWI put on in Beverly Hills, and published authors would come, and we would each take a group of aspiring writers, and they would bring their material with them. And since, you know, I was known best then in Society of Children Book Writers and Illustrators, obviously as children's books, I would take a picture book group. And they would bring you their work, and we would read it and then try to offer them some constructive, suggestions. or if they were struggling with something, it's like, you know, how do I do this, or what should I do about this, or I'm stuck with this, or, you know, how do you make this, that, or the other thing happen? And so, you know, you need to get out there and get that support, and those kinds of groups can offer it to you, and online, too. I mean, I see posts every day of, like, Women Writing the West, or, you know, does anybody out there know if you can, if cattle do this, that, or the other thing? You know, it's like, yeah, because I'm writing from, you know, New Jersey, and, you know, not too much cattle handling going on in my neighborhood. So, you know, you'll get those kinds of questions, and, you know, there's usually somebody who'll jump up and say, oh, sure, you know, let me answer that for you, or, you know, here's how you would do this, or here's how that worked, you know, in a ranching situation or whatever. So, you know, you need that, those connections, you know, to get that kind of support, you know, for your writing.
I wanted to wait to get this to the last, because this is kind of like my favorite Janet Squire story. Monty,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
The courageous survival of a rescue dog. That has got to be one of the best stories I've read in a long time.
Thank you.
It is just tremendous. And that courage that little dog has is just unbelievable. And the way you captured it was just so wonderful. How did you get involved with Monty?
Well, I have been a longtime supporter of animal rescue organizations. And at the time, I happened to be closely associated, and still I am for that matter, with a group called Animal Rescue Volunteers in Simi Valley. And they are the group that actually took on Monty's recovery and rehabilitation. And when I first saw the post go up about him, it was someone whose mother was associated with the group. Her daughter found this dog in her front yard one morning when she got up, gunshot, emaciated. And how he managed to find himself at her front yard out in the middle of the high desert here in California, you know, he wasn't in a neighborhood. He just happened to stumble across this house kind of out, you know, by itself. And she took one look at him and said, wow, this is going to be more work than I could do. She rescues dogs all the time out there. That area, Palmdale, Lancaster, sees a lot of abandoned dogs. You can really not drive down the highway without seeing some dog that someone has just driven out there and dumped the dog out of the car and said, well, good luck. And usually it's just a case of they need to be fed and kept warm and rehomed. You know, it's pretty straightforward. But when she found this dog, it was clearly, you know, going to be a lot more complicated than that. And she knew she wasn't going to be able to deal with this on her own. And so through her mom, she connected with Animal Rescue Volunteers so that they could get this dog the kind of care he needed, because the first vet she took him to said, you know, this is a waste of time, just put him down. Mm-hmm. You know, this dog can't survive these injuries. And, you know, maybe that's what it appeared, but this dog would not give up. Even in the state that he was in, he was wagging his tail, he was giving kisses, and nobody was willing to give up on a dog who wouldn't quit. And so he went through a number of surgeries and eventually lost a leg, but recovered and got rehomed. And since I was there at the beginning, you know, they were asking for people to help, you know, in any way they could. And I thought, well, I can make a donation, I mean, like everybody else is doing, to kind of offset this dog's expenses. But I'm a writer, and I can do something more than just write him a check. I can write the story.
Right.
And so, you know.
Well, wonderful job.
Away I went.
Wonderful job. And if somebody wants to send money to this animal rescue, how would they do that?
They have a website. It's Animal Rescue Volunteers in Simi Valley. And, you know, they do this kind of work all the time of taking on these dogs that have been abandoned or abused. And, you know, they can always use whatever support. You can always do something. What we try to tell people is, you know, if you can't adopt, you can foster a dog. If you can't foster, you can donate. If you can't do anything else, you can go on the website and share that information on Facebook, because maybe the next person that sees your post will be able to do something else. So, you know, if you want to do something, there's always something you can do.
And you're using the book right now to continue to raise money through the end of this month?
Actually, from the time the Monty book first came out, and it says right in the front of the book, in case there's, you know, so nobody has any doubts about it, proceeds from the sale of every single copy of Monty's book gets donated to animal rescue groups. And right now, I'm designating the funds from all the books sold in June and July to a rescue group called Grandpaws, P-A-W-S, Senior Sanctuary. They rescue senior dogs, and those are dogs that are really hard to adopt. They usually do have some little, you know, old man, old lady issues that have to be addressed. And so they're difficult dogs to get adopted out of the public shelters because people want puppies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but these dogs, they've still got a lot of love to give. I like to say old dogs, big hearts. Mm-hmm. And so for June and July, all the proceeds from Monty are going to Grandpa's Senior Rescue.
Worthy cause.
Yeah, I think so.
What are you reading now?
What am I reading now? Actually, I'm reading some memoirs written by early frontiersmen in Arizona, of course. And I'm finding that really interesting. And let's see, what else am I reading? I'm looking at a couple of science books. I do really like science.
We have a call coming in.
Reading some nonfiction.
Interesting.
You're on LA Talk Radio. Who am I speaking to?
Your wife.
Our booking manager.
Or known as the Booker.
What's going on, Booker?
I'm listening to this wonderful, wonderful radio show.
Are you?
And I'm loving Janet Squires.
John and Ken? KFI?
We agree, Janet, Jerry.
Yeah, we're really enjoying it,
too. I'm having trouble because I'm listening to my computer and I'm talking on the phone and we're not syncing.
Oh, well, turn the computer down.
I'm going in the other room.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, I would like to say, Janet Squires, you are my hero.
Thank you.
It's wonderful that you love strong women, and the story of Monty, oh my God, I wanted to cry. But he was rescued, and that is so absolutely the greatest story ever.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I certainly did. And I want to say, Bobby Jean, when do you sleep?
Yes, my insomniac co-host.
Not much, Jerry.
Oh, my God. Emails at 3 a.m.? Are you kidding me?
Well, on the East Coast, that would be 6 a.m. That's not so bad.
Yes, but
well,
you're not
there.
Well, I know,
but I'm not getting them till 11, so...
I don't sleep very much, Jerry. That's why they probably don't make a lot of sense sometimes.
All right, Booker, tell us who's on next week. Oh, I am.
We have, in the next 2 weeks, is Jim Christina.
Yay.
Ta-da.
Yay. And on the 23rd, we have John Bergstrom. And thank you, John, so much for stepping up and filling in and telling your story.
And the 23rd, who do we have?
John Bergstrom.
No, he's on the 16th.
Oh, geez. No, we have John Bergstrom stepped in on the
16th. Ed Erlach is on the 23rd.
Yeah, we have Ed Erlach.
Ed Erlach, that's right.
Yeah, we got it.
Bet you can't say that three times fast.
Jerry, we can't thank you enough for organizing this. How many emails did you get today from folks that would like to join us?
Well, actually, I got three emails, but one from a lady that is a publisher, and she's representing all kinds of authors.
Yeah, it's so exciting. We really thank everyone for contacting us. So we're going to have such a wonderful array of authors and bloggers and publishers and literary agents, and it's just wonderful. And we would encourage you, Jerry, how do they reach us if they want to come on the show? What do they do?
They email me at guestwb@yahoo.com.
That's guest, GUESTWB, at yahoo.com?
Right.
Okay, and that's also to Jerry Christina.
That is also to Jerry Christina, the Booker.
The Booker. You know, you keep saying that, it's going to cost me another $20.
Exactly. That's why.
Okay, then. Well, we're going to finish up with Janet.
Okay. Thank you, Janet, so much. It was wonderful meeting you on the radio and a wonderful show.
My pleasure.
Thanks for calling in.
Thank you, Bobby Jean.
Thank you, Jerry.
Okay.
See
bye-bye.
You in a bit. Bye.
Oh, goodness. Well, you know, I have one other question for Janet. Do we have time for one more?
Absolutely.
Janet,
we have about 5 minutes.
Janet's another author that does a lot with social media. You're on Facebook and you're on Twitter. And do you have any comments or advice for folks about how to use social media?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Diligently, sparingly. You can end up spending so much time handling your social media activities that you find you're not spending the time in front of the computer writing like right. you should be. So it's a balancing act, and to not get so caught up in the, ooh, look who liked me on Facebook today, or ooh, look who favorited my tweet today, and you know, kind of lose track of why. Mm-hmm. You're on Facebook and Twitter, and that is to promote your writing, which hopefully you are doing. So,
because you kind of, even though you have publishers, you're still doing it all. I mean, you do a lot of it yourself. You
every
do a
writer,
lot of the marketing yourself.
Every writer, regardless of whether they're published by a big house. Gingerbread Cowboy was HarperCollins' third biggest publisher in the country. Whiskey Creek is a small publisher. They did Desperate Straits. It doesn't really matter. You're still going to have to get out there and do your promotion and, you know, keep your name and your brand, you know, out there. You just can't let it be at the expense of actually writing another book.
Yeah, I think that's a big challenge for all of us. Micro businesses.
I totally get that. I find myself doing the same thing. So I wound up not having the internet on a computer that I'm using for a word processor. That way you can't bounce back and forth, and even if you want to, you can't.
Oh, that's smart. So, that's so smart.
Yeah, I mean, because we all know, when you get on Facebook and you're there for like 3 hours. And you look up and you go, what the hell have I been doing for 3 hours?
Exactly. Or you allow emails and things to, you know, we don't get solid blocks of time anymore. And then everybody's urgent. Like, didn't you, you know,
right.
respond
right.
quickly. And you can't just think about what you're doing.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I usually try to handle business first thing in the morning. And then sometime in the evening, I'll go back and look to see, you know, if I've gotten responses to something that I'd put out there, or somebody's, you know,
very
contacted
smart.
Me in the meantime. But I try not to, you know, go to my computer for social media, you know, repeatedly during the daytime, because it really can turn into an awful time sink.
It really is. And actually, the Writer's Block has a Facebook page, which is Writer's Block Radio Show. And we have, last count, 400 and
something.
How many likes?
We were like 83 away from 500.
Yeah, we're closer than that now. I was 460 something when
we
I
left. We thank everyone for that
do.
Because
we
we're
do.
Still so new and young, and I don't go all day long looking to see how many more
no,
people have liked
either.
This, but I'm always sort of startled, like, oh my gosh, you know, isn't that fun?
It's such a great thing, and we have so much fun doing this show, and delightful people like Janet come on, and her daughter, of course, who hasn't said a word since she's been in
she's
here.
She's been smiling
she's
and
been
nodding.
Smiling and nodding
she's
a lot.
She's ideal for radio.
Yeah, I mean, as a radio guest, she's perfect. And Janet, we thank you so much for taking the time to come down to see us tonight.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's been a load of fun.
Oh, we wouldn't have dreamt waiting too long to have you on.
Okay, well, great. Thanks.
Bobby?
Yes?
Been great.
It's been great.
And we are going to be signing off, and we thank everybody for listening. And have a wonderful rest of your week and a real good time wherever it is you're going to have it. And we are going to close, I think. No, we're not. Okay, well then, fine. We're just going to stay in the air. What the hell?
Happy 4th.
There we go.